Welcome to the New Mexico Motorsports Report, presented by Napa Auto Parts, Yearwood Performance, ABQ Dragway, the Unser Racing Museum, and the New Mexico Rods and Rides Magazine. Your host, David Swope, will be talking about events happening around the state and on the national scene, whether it's got two wheels or four wheels, pavement and off-road racing, or park and shine. If you are into it, we are into it. Call now, 994-1017. That's 994-1017 to get into all the action. Now, here's your host, David Swope.
All right, good morning. It's Saturday morning. That means it's time for the New Mexico Motorsports Report here on ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team. I'm your host, David Swope, and we'll be talking about automotive and related motorsports activities around the state and on the national scene each and every week. We invite you to get involved by calling 994-1017. That's 994-1017 and get into the action. Whether it has two wheels or four, asphalt or dirt track racing, off-road or park and shine, we'll be talking about. This is New Mexico's only show devoted to motorsports-related activities with a full hour here on ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team. I want to start off by thanking Dominic Aragon for sitting in for me last week. It was a heck of a show getting Jeff Bodine on, live report from Talladega, and a NASCAR veteran, actually having Sam in the studio with him. So thank you very much, Dominic, for taking care of that for me. Of course, I had the opportunity to head out to Austin, Texas for the U.S. Grand Prix. And let me tell you, what an amazing event that was. And I mean, there was activity, you know, on and off the track. And I'm going to kind of go over some of that with you quickly this morning. But I want to start off by, you know, talking about the race. Lewis Hamilton took a commanding victory at the U.S. Grand Prix to give his slim championship chances a boost at a critical point in the season. It was Hamilton's first victory since a German Grand Prix back in July. At one stage, it looked like Hamilton might finish with two Red Bulls between him and Rosberg, which would, of course, would totally help his opportunity to make up the 26 points that he is currently behind. But Max Verstappen's race unraveled with a slow pit stop and engine failure. Rosberg capitalized with a free pit stop under the virtually safety car period, which was interesting because it seemed to go on forever. I mean, you know, it's probably the difference between when you're watching it on TV or when you're watching it at the track, because a lot of times it's just a localized yellow, but it was a very high-speed corner that came up with. So that period kind of, you know, seemed to go on and on and on. Rosberg can still win a title by claiming a minimum of 2 second places and a third place at the remaining three Grand Prix, but the results could bring, brought an end to the run of five consecutive finishes ahead of Hamilton. All Hamilton can do at their remaining races is to, you know, try and get back to his form that he had in Austin and run the table. Ricardo held on to third place, but was frustrated. You know, he had a trouble in a pit stop. And had to come back out. I mean, it was like what's funny is it's like it's an 8 second pit stop and it was like the end of the world, but he drove an incredible race and it sometimes looked like he had the fastest car on the track. Verstappen, who'd been closing on Rosberg at the start of the second stint, you know, ultimately had the engine failure and it'd be a problem. The stricken Red Bull brought out the safety car period and requiring drivers to slow their pace, and it, you know, like I said, seemed to go on forever. Kimi Raikkonen was having an interesting battle for fourth with teammate Sebastian Vettel. Had it not been for a loose wheel nut in the final stop, the Finn was in his aggressive three-stop strategy on super soft, that's the tires, but the final pit stop was given to the green light to go before the rear end had properly attached. His race came to an end at the end of the pit lane under orders from the Ferrari pit wall. The incident allowed Vettel to take a lonely fourth place at the end of the race. With the routine second half of the race at the front of the field, Fernando Alonso provided entertainment to the Dakota crowd. The final 29 laps, the McLaren driver fought his way from ninth to fifth. The impressive drive came along with two overtaking moves at the end of the race and barged past Felipe Massa. Carlos Sainz finished fifth. The contact with Massa led to a puncture on the Williams, and the Brazilian finished seventh behind Toro Rossi's Sainz. Sergio Perez took eighth for Force India and, recovering from a spin on the first lap, was tagged by the second Toro Rosso, Daniel Cavett. I tell you, Daniel Cavett, he better watch himself. I mean, that guy's going to be out of Formula One in a hurry if he keeps running into everybody. Jenson Button took ninth for McLaren ahead of Roman Grosjean, who secured the last point for the American Haas team. So your top five right now, Nico Rosberg, 26-point lead over Lewis Hamilton, Daniel Ricciardo, Sebastian Vettel, and Kimi Raikkonen. Max Verstappen's got 165 points in six, so that's a notable mention because he's only five back from Kimi Raikkonen. Three races left to go, the Mexican GP, the GP of Brazil, and Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. So it's going to be interesting down the stretch. Grosjean and Haas had not scored points since the Australian Grand Prix, with numerous brake and setup issues hampering the team in recent rounds. Grosjean's prospects of returning to the top 10 look bleak ahead of the race as he started 17, but the Frenchman climbed into the final points paying position after Kimi Raikkonen's retirement in the latter part of the race. Grosjean, who is celebrating his 100th F1 race, thinks scoring points for Haas home race will be a welcome boost after recent struggles, and I tell you, that was the truth. Grosjean capped a mixed race for the American team, with teammate Esteban Gutierrez severing a brake failure in lap 17. And I tell you, the crowd was really behind the American team. Set a lot of Haas T-shirts, but it was amazing, actually. The crowd, you know, with so many different languages being spoke, just around the area that we were, and it was definitely a different crowd. The street party that happened down in Austin in the evening was absolutely amazing. I mean, they closed to, you know, five or six streets downtown Austin, and people were just milling around, having a great time, and it was definitely an international flair. You ever have a chance to go check that out? I mean, you really should, because it was it's different than a NASCAR race, absolutely. A little bit different than that. Let's stick on the Haas subject, though. Haas could delay a final decision on its 2017 driver lineup until the end of the current season. F1's newest team is yet to confirm who will partner with Roman Grosjean next year, with uncertainty swirling around Esteban Gutierrez's future. The Mexican driver is confident he will remain on the grid next season, but recently admitted the situation has become complicated. Gutierrez says yet to score a point in 2016, with all of Haas 26 from the season alongside Grosjean's name. Haas has suggested the delay for Gutierrez is to further stake his claim for another year with the team. Haas has ruled out signing an American driver for 2017, saying there is no one with Formula One experience required to help the team master next season extensive rule changes. And they are going to be extensive. As a matter of fact, the cars might look completely different. That was another takeaway for me, is I always thought that the cars were smaller. I don't know why I had the perception that they would be smaller, but in length they're actually about the same length of and in most cases a width of a NASCAR. It's just with so much more body and so much more weight, they look so much different. But they are really much bigger than I thought. And you know, like I said, it was amazing. Of course, the V6 turbo sounded great, whizzing by the grandstands. But, you know, when you think about, you know, Americans in Formula One, I mean, you know, it has been 38 years since Formula One had an American race winner or world champion. Jimmy Carter was president. Tom Landry's Cowboys were Super Bowl champ. And Pete Rose had just scored his 3,000 major league hit. That's how long ago it's been since you had an American win in Formula One. The driver who claimed that, both of them, was Mario Andretti, winning the 1978 World Championship with his iconic Lotus 79. He became the second American after Phil Hill to claim the Formula One title through his triumph, and the final victory at that year's Dutch Grand Prix precipitated a nearly four-decade-long drought for drivers from his country. There are several tragic parallels between Andretti and Hill's championship. Both men wrapped up their championships at Monza after teammates suffered fatal accidents. For Andretti, the loss of Ronnie Peterson always left a cloud over his finest achievement. That day in Italy should have been a realization of a life's ambition at the place of dreams began 24 years earlier. As a youngster living in Italy, Andretti had become transfixed with motorsports back in 1954. Of course, he was watching, you know, famous Juan Manuel Fangio at the 1954 Italian Grand Prix. And then, of course, his family moved to the United States. Andretti arrived in America dreaming of being Dan Gurney in a Ferrari. All in America's path led elsewhere. In his new country, Andretti split duties between midget racing, NASCAR, and national championship, making part-time appearances in F1 between 68 and 72. He claimed the pole in his F1 debut in the 1968 U.S. Grand Prix at Watkins Glen. Man, I'd love to see Formula One go back to Watkins Glen. Before committing to Formula One full-time, midway throughout the 70s, Andretti claimed a Daytona 500 in 1967 and an Indy 500 in 1969. He remains the only man to win those two events and an F1 World Championship, having grown restless at switching disciplines. Andretti finally completed a full season of F1 with the American outfit Parnelli in 1975 and then accepted an offer to drive for Colin Chapman's Lotus team when Parnelli folded early in 1976, a successful partnership that would eventually lead to a world championship. What's interesting about this, why we're kind of bring it up, is last year at Homestead, Lewis Hamilton was actually there. Of course, the last race supposedly for Jeff Gordon, as it turns out. But Hamilton was there, and he kind of alluded that he had some interest in NASCAR. And so I thought it would be interesting, after the end of, this season, maybe one more season of Formula One, if he would actually make the jump and try and come over to NASCAR and see if maybe he could get that done. Because the NASCAR schedule, it'd be interesting to see a world-class athlete like Hamilton actually try and pull the double on Memorial Day. But anyway, we got a whole lot more coming up, including we're going to go trackside. That's right, do the strip in Las Vegas, catch up with some NHRA, as well as we're going to be talking about a Speedway Park Raceway reunion that's coming up November 18th in Athletic Casino. Johnny Johnson's going to join the show and give us some details. You've been listening to the New Mexico Motorsports Report here on ESPN Radio, 101.7 The Team. I guess you're just what I need. That's
what I need. Hi, this is Henry Winkler, and you're listening to the New Mexico Motorsports Report with David Swope, ESPN Radio, 101.7 The Team.
The pit stop is now over. Let's return to the New Mexico Motorsports Report and get things revved up with your phone calls at 994-1017. That's 994-1017. Now, back to the New Mexico Motorsports Report, presented by Napa Auto Parts, Your Wood Performance, ABQ Dragway, the Unser Racing Museum, and the New Mexico Rods and Rides Magazine. Here is David.
All right, welcome back to the New Mexico Motorsports Report here on ESPN Radio 1017. A lot of neat stuff coming up. I mean, we're going kind of into the off-season of racing, but that doesn't mean there isn't a lot of cool stuff to do. And coming up on Saturday, November 18th, from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m., It's a Friday? Oh, let's see, I got to check my date. So Friday, you got to check me here. Friday, November 18th at Isleta Resort and Casino, we're going to have a reunion of the Speedway Park and Albuquerque Raceway. And joining us in the show this morning is Johnny Johnson. How are you doing this morning, Johnny?
I'm good. David, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fantastic. This is such a great idea. Because there's so many stories that you want to find out if they're the truth or not. And so, really getting the people that were there in the room, and looking at some of the old pictures, is really great because, I mean, there's been a lot of great races out there, a lot of great people over the years. And so talk a little bit about kind of what was the emphasis? Where did this whole idea kind of come from?
Well, I've been around racing since the early 60s and I was talking to Joe Sherwood, matter of fact, and told him, I said, we ought to get all these guys together. And he kind of hesitated a little bit, Joe.
Yeah.
And so I decided to call Brenda Gant, who's very progressive in racing. Her entire family has raced, and several track champions, and two of them are ladies, by the way.
Right, exactly.
And so I gave her a call. She bit. And I said, okay, let's get going. Let's try it. Let's put it on Facebook and just see what kind of response. And that's where we started.
Wow. And so what kind of, I mean, you're inviting people to kind of bring their memory books. I mean, bring photographs.
Absolutely.
And just, I mean, it's just going to be an evening of just swapping stories and different
bench
stuff.
Bench racing 101.
Awesome.
And one of the things that we wanted to do was everybody bring their memorabilia, their jackets, and their stories. And I guess the old saying goes, the older I get, the faster I was.
Right. You know? Absolutely. Absolutely. So. That victory wasn't even close. You know, I mean, I won the championship, with three races to go, that kind of thing. You know, some of the things that I have memories. I grew up in the Northeast Heights. You could hear Speedway Park.
Yes.
Back in the day. I didn't go down. I got to admit, I didn't go to the South Valley as much, and the Raceway and the Seven Flags and all the different names that it had, but I could hear on Friday nights. I could hear it going on at Speedway Park, and of course, probably the greatest living promoter I've ever met. With Crosby, and in his sports shows and everything he did. But I'd even ask you this, and would like to talk a little bit about it on the air. But the guys, the construction guys that also raced there, supposedly would leave the gates unlocked, and that's where the equipment that they actually cut the track and they groomed the track with.
Is that a myth?
Is it a myth, or did it happen?
Well, one of the things that about Speedway Park, and it's got stories that are like an encyclopedia going out there with Frank Crosby, and some of them you kind of got to put up your filter, if you know what I mean. But that one, there is some truth to that, only because those of us that raced out there noticed that sometimes the grader was white and sometimes it was brown.
Right.
So there might be some truth to that one.
Well, that's fantastic, and I don't doubt it at all. I mean, he was very convincing. There's a lot of analogies for what a great salesman he was, but a good example for me is he was so good he'd sell you your own shoes.
Oh, absolutely, even if they didn't fit.
So let's talk a little bit about maybe some of the drivers that you know that are going to actually come out to the event. I'm sure you've got some people that have already RSVP'd.
Oh yeah, we've got a list, and we're really pleased. Brenda and I both. She called me last night, and we're over 225 now.
Oh my goodness! Wow.
Yeah, and it's growing by the day, and this is a great venue for us, because not everybody's on Facebook.
Correct.
So we want the racers, the fans, the car owners, anybody that was involved with Speedway, Albuquerque Raceway, Seven Flags, Duke City, the dirt racers of those two eras. We really would like to see them out there, and so we definitely want to make sure that they know about it.
Well, when you think about Seven Flags and Duke City Raceway, and you think about the South Valley, I mean, I always think about Ima Jean.
Absolutely.
And she was such a staple, and I mean, kept that thing going. And what's interesting to me is, like, she basically had a restaurant and a race broke out. That's kind of how she approached it, you know. And so losing her like a year ago or something, we actually talked a little bit about that on the morning after it happened. But talk a little bit about your experience in the South Valley and running that track.
Oh, I when I got back out of the service, I raced prior to Vietnam, and so I left my car in the parking lot, and I hope Scotty Sage got it, but. Because I obviously couldn't take it to boot camp with me. But,
right.
So anyway, when I got back out of the service, Raceway, I guess, had been built in 68, and I got back in 69. And immediately went down there and took a look, and there's a half-mile track and a 3/8-mile track, and I thought, okay, I got to do this again.
All right.
And much to my wife's chagrin, she
absolutely.
Didn't, yeah.
Well, she's getting even with you at the estate sale this morning.
Yeah, she is. Yeah. Yeah. Thank God the car she's in doesn't have FM, so I'm good.
Exactly.
But I met AL and Ima Jean, and you're absolutely right. That's two very fine people. I mean, they were down to earth, and they loved racing. That entire Smith family was just nothing but about racing. And Ima Jean was special, and I went to her service when she passed, and that was a sad day. It was. And so.
Yeah, lost to local racing. But let's talk a little bit about Buddy Taylor.
An icon.
Definitely a loss who was felt across all levels of local racing. I mean, I grew up actually in road racing, but I still knew, the morning after he passed. I mean, it was amazing to have lost somebody of that caliber. Talk a little bit about Buddy Taylor.
Well, Buddy Taylor obviously was racing at Speedway Park back in the day, because I think Speedway Park started in 1950. And he was, I believe he raced at the other two tracks also prior to that. So, but Buddy was phenomenal. And one of the things about Buddy that was a mystique was that everyone wanted him in the back of the pack on the main event because they knew he was coming to the front.
Right.
And so, I mean, that much talent, that much charisma that he had was awesome to watch. And that's probably what hooked many of us into racing. Absolutely. Was watching Buddy Taylor.
Absolutely. And, of course, you know, back in that period, you had Manzanita was still going super
Keith
strong.
Hall's, Keith Hall's Manzanita.
Yeah, because you'd run Speedway Park Friday, you'd go over to Manzanita, run Saturday, and then you'd come back on Sunday afternoon and run in the South Valley. So, I mean, they talk about that happening out in the Midwest. I mean, it still happens, I mean, Wednesday through Sunday. But it was a really hotbed, during the 60s and 70s at running a series where you could get three races, in a weekend.
The racing back in the 70s was probably the best I've ever witnessed, and probably won't witness again other than the Midwest. And we used to do exactly that because Speedway Park, I believe, closed in 82 or 83,
That's right around that time.
And so up until that time, Speedway Park was running in conjunction with, even while we had Seven Flags, I actually was one of the owners at one time.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I can't believe that you have any money left.
Yeah, that's why I had to go to work.
Exactly. So. Exactly. You want to make a little money in racing, start with a lot of money.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely.
That's very true.
Talk a little bit about, the Unzers and the involvement of Speedway Park, and then of course, Young Jr. coming up and just just setting the sprint car world on fire.
Yeah, he set the bar pretty high for around here. And one of the things about the Unzers is everybody knows, they put Albuquerque on the map, let's be honest. And they started at Speedway Park as well, and they did racing at the Albuquerque Raceway with the World of Outlaws, and that's where Little Al came to shine. And so, I mean, they've been an icon, and obviously you've been to their museum, and it's pretty impressive. And we have reached out to them. We're certainly hoping that they come in force to this event because they'll be sorely missed if they don't. But we're really looking forward to this event, and the Unzers and the Demeries and the Cables and the Palmers. It's Hargers. And, of course, we want to talk about Frank Crosby.
Yeah.
About that much more so.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, how would people get more information? Facebook is one way, but if you don't have Facebook, is there a number that they can call?
They can call me at the office. I'll be happy to visit with them, and that's 884-5575 is the number at the office, and just ask for me because the receptionist won't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
So
I don't know what Johnny's into this time.
Yeah, that's right.
And what kind of cost is there? Is there, what's all included?
Well,
in that?
What it is, we're going to charge $20 per person at the door, and that's going to cover the A and V, the building, the hors d'oeuvres, and the evening. And we're going to have door prizes, games, and we're going to do some live interviews. And so we're certainly hoping that if you have not gone on Facebook and RSVP'd, and if you didn't know about it, please give me a call. I'll give you my email address as well.
Okay.
jrjohnson@nmtrucking.org. Send me an email. I'll be more than happy to send you a flyer if you want to give me a call and we talk about the details. Or give Brenda Gant an email.
Okay.
Brenda Gant, GANTT09@gmail.com. Reach out to her, either one of us. We'd be happy to see you. And trust me, you don't want to miss this event. This one's going to be fun.
Yeah, it sounds great. Make sure you go on Friday, though.
Yeah.
don't remember my Saturday, mix-up thing. But that's Friday, November the 18th. 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. is going to be a lot of fun at Isleta Resort and Casino. It's the Albuquerque Speedway Park and Raceway Reunion. And hopefully this is one of many. But Johnny, really appreciate you coming in and giving us the update.
Anytime.
All right. We got a whole lot more coming up, including we are going to go to Joe Sherwood. He's actually out at the Strip in Vegas for the NHRA race, as well as we're going to talk some NASCAR with with Matt Willis from ESPN.com. You've been listening to the New Mexico Motorsports Report here on ESPN Radio, 101.7 The Team.
ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team with David Swope, the fastest radio host in the West.
Like anything was possible, hit cruise control and rub my eyes. The last 3 days, the rain was unstoppable. It was always cold.
The pit stop is now over. Let's return to the New Mexico Motorsports Report and get things revved up with your phone calls at 994-1017. That's 994-1017. Now, back to the New Mexico Motorsports Report, presented by Napa Auto Parts, Yearwood Performance, ABQ Dragway, the Unser Racing Museum, and the New Mexico Rods and Rides Magazine. Here is David.
All right. Welcome back to the New Mexico Motorsports Report here on ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team. Hey, Martin Truex vowed to win the remaining Sprint Cup races this season once he was knocked out of the playoffs. And I tell you, I'm not sure that I want to mess with Martin Truex. A pole-winning run last night at Martinsville Speedway was a strong step towards fulfilling that goal. Truex turned a lap of 98.206 miles per hour to win the starting position for Sunday's race. He also won the pole last weekend in Talladega, but a blown motor eliminated from the chase for the Sprint Cup Championship. He said afterwards he was determined to win the final four races of the year. Joey Logano qualified second, followed by eight-time Martinsville winner Jimmy Johnson. And look out, Jimmy Johnson has made it to the round of eight. Could this be a seventh for him? A.J. Allmendinger qualified fourth, Chase Elliott fifth, Tony Stewart sixth, and you know, it's going to be a dogfight. Joining us right now is Matt Willis with ESPN.com. How are you doing this morning, Matt?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. I was absolutely shocked that Martin Truex was eliminated last week. They have been so completely dominant. And I tell you, I mean, I had him picked to win. Brad Keselowski was also a big surprise, but that is what Talladega is all about. Talk a little bit about your observations from Talladega.
I'm right there with you. That it was a surprise that you know, we had, you know, a couple of drivers starting at the front like Truex and Keselowski, who looked to be so dominant this season. I mean, Truex led the most laps, and really this was looking like it was really his year. And it was a shock that, you know, it wasn't even like the big wreck that took them out. It was an engine issue, and you don't typically see a ton of engine issues at Talladega. It's usually the wrecks you have to fear. So it was a shock to see those guys go out. You know, Keselowski had been so dominant in the plate tracks this year, I kind of thought he was going to win that race and to advance to the last round like we've seen him do before.
And so what do you think? I mean, on one hand, I thought I saw a little bit of parity, you know, because you have Hendrick, you have Penske, you have Stuart Haas, you have JGR. And then I realized, well, wait a minute, four of those are JGR cars. And I'm not sure that I really appreciated how they, you know, used the three-car tandem to kind of, you know, protect themselves and were, you know, kind of backed into the final eight, if you will. I mean, what were your thoughts on that strategy to get their cars into the next round?
I didn't like it much at all. You know, you like to see guys fighting for wins as opposed to just driving for points, which is really what this format was supposed to emphasize, you know, racing
exactly
for wins. And I think, you know, once they saw the problems that Truex had and Keselowski had, and Chase Elliott was already further back in points, and as was Austin Dillon. So I think they kind of saw the landscape. They didn't have to do anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even though, you know, it almost backfired on them because so many cars finished on the lead lap, but they really didn't need to race. Maybe the solution is maybe moving this race up a leg in the chase and making it so, you know, a guy wants to punch a ticket with a win more than he just realizes what he has to avoid to advance.
Well, that's a very good point. Talk about guys fighting. Kevin Harvick v. Kurt Busch. My money's got to be on Kevin Harvick in that fight, even though the outlaw in the past has really had a lot of things to say. What in the heck was that about?
You know what? When I heard, you know, a couple years ago that Kevin Harvick and Kurt Busch were going to be teammates, if you told me it would have taken a couple years for them to have an incident like this, I would have said, nah, it's going to happen much faster than that.
Oh,
so it's,
yeah.
It's, you know, a couple of put a couple volatile elements like that as teammates, and something like that's bound to happen where they expect, you know, a little bit of teamwork and it didn't happen. And both of them advanced to the next round of the chase, so they're going to have three more races where they're both looking, you know, primarily at titles instead of, you know, trying to, you know, assist their teammate to win. Those are the last two chances for Stuart Haas to win a title this year.
Well, and that's a good point. I mean, because now, I mean, the next elimination is to the round of four. And that's one race championship, one race to win it. At what point does Joe Gibbs Racing take the gloves off and mano a mano? Because, I mean, Denny Hamlin got in, you know, basically on a tiebreak. I mean, one of the greatest stories would have been seeing the number three make the round of eight with Austin Dillon, Chase Elliott with just a tremendous season. And now we go basically to, you know, Hendrick's track this weekend where Jimmy Johnson's been so dominant. But at what point do you think JGR, you know, basically takes the gloves off and says, hey, you know, guys, I mean, go out there and get it done?
I think it happens right now because you have a leg that sets up pretty well for them, at least to start, because you have Martinsville, you know, Kyle Busch, the defending champ here. Denny Hamlin's had a ton of success at Martinsville. Then you go to Texas where Matt Kenseth and Carl Edwards have been great. So I think the first couple of races legs set up really well for them, but the odds are definitely against them getting four cars in the championship round. That would mean a complete sweep, and it mean guys like Johnson and Harvick aren't advancing. So this is the round where I think it gets a little, you know, time to take the gloves off, as you said, for JGR, and you know, we got to win two races, and only two of the guys can win the first two races.
Well, and let's talk about Martinsville last year, Matt Kenseth, Joey Logano issue. Logano winning last week. I don't know if that was relief on his face or pure excitement that maybe we should be worried about the fact that Joey Logano is back, because I've really wondered where he went after that incident last year. I mean, he's silently, you know, silently winning and silently moving forward, which is totally a Penske thing anyway. But are we going to see a resurgence of Joey Logano now?
You know what? I think it's definitely trending that way because like you said, you know, after that Martinsville, you know, incident with Kenseth, he, you know, just wasn't himself. He won once this year before the chase, and that was at Michigan, a track that's, you know, very well for him. And then he wins again at Talladega. You know, he raced really well at Martinsville last year before he got taken out. He that's a good track for him, and Texas is a good track for him. And I think now that, you know, Penske's resources are going to be 100% behind Logano, I think that trends very well for him. So, you know, I really think that Logano is now, you know, we weren't really talking about him as a title contender because kind of the fact he kind of ran around mid-pack of the chase standings during the regular season. But now, you know, as drivers get trimmed out and you're saying, like, you see only eight drivers left, and he's definitely one guy that you have to look at and say, you know, this guy can win a title.
Yeah, and I'm not sure we were going to have this conversation, but we are now, which is Jeff Gordon could win Martinsville. I was going to ask you, I mean, who do you think's going to win Martinsville?
You know, it's funny you said that. I was looking at the numbers yesterday and looking, like, Jimmy Johnson's numbers at Martinsville are awesome, but he hasn't led a lap there in the last four races. Very, you know, no finish better than ninth. He's not quite, you know, up to his career numbers there. And I look at Denny Hamlin, look at Jeff and Kyle Busch, and like Kenseth, Logano. Those guys are all have had great runs there, but not consistent. The guy that's been consistently great there, even going right up to his last race there, is Jeff Gordon.
Exactly. So,
and, you know, no guy knows how to get around it, and he's going to, you know, he doesn't care about points or anything. I think Jeff Gordon can win this race. And if I had to pick one driver right now, it would be the 88, which is now Gordon.
Yeah, exactly. which is weird in itself, you know. It's like, oh, pick up the 88. Oh, yeah, of course, everybody's going to pick Junior. I mean, you know, why not? But, it's such an interesting story. I mean, because last year, when he won Martinsville, I mean, that put him into the round of four. That put him into the championship, which was a fantastic story because, I mean, he had a real shot, to get it done. I mean, it was absolutely amazing. And you can't rule him out in this race. You got to ask yourself, he's probably more refreshed. He's got nothing to lose. And really, I mean, are you going to get in a fight with Jeff Gordon? I mean, honestly, you know, it's one of those things that, that's amazing. But you know, let's talk a little about title, you know, the four drivers going in there. It would be great if we had, you know, one car from four different teams and had a real battle like that and just, mano-a-mano. But, you got the Kevin Harvick Invitational. That's what we call the race in Phoenix, you know, coming up. So who do you think that we're going to look at as the final four and then the eventual title winner?
You know what? It's right now it's Kevin Harvick's to lose. He's
right.
Got the, you know, Vegas gives him the best odds, and because Phoenix is just such a good track for him that they can, you know, they can look ahead to, you know, that is the last race of leg is the only thing that makes you a little nervous. But,
right.
You know, going, you know, Harvick and, you know, who's running Baron Harvick week in, week out right now? You
Correct.
Can make the argument that Johnson Logano, after kind of humdrum regular seasons, those guys might be the second, third strongest teams right now. So that leaves the Kyle Busch and Edwards, Kenseth Hamlin, Kurt Busch all to battle for the last spot right now. And that's four Gibbs drivers and Kurt Busch. So it could really come down to four Gibbs drivers racing for one spot.
Yeah, yeah, which is amazing when you consider, I mean, they got a 25% chance of moving on. I mean, they could effectively, you know, it could be an all JGR, you know, final, for that matter. But, yeah, I totally agree with him. I mean, it's really Kevin Harvick's to lose. I mean, he has been, you know, I mean, driving the wheels off of that car. And in some ways has kept his nose a little cleaner other than, you know, getting into it with his own teammate, was very interesting. But I think it's going to be, another, great title. I'd actually pick Truex, so I'm out. You know, I mean, you know, I'm going to have to.
I'm with you. I picked Truex, and I can't back away. I'll still pick Truex. See, I'll figure something out.
Well, in last week's show, I had a pinch hitter because I was in Austin, and they picked Keselowski and Truex to win the race at Talladega. So, you know, right now we all don't know what's going on, which is exactly why I think that the Chase format has been awesome. But hey, Matt, really appreciate you coming in and giving us a breakdown, and always enjoy having you on the show.
Hey, thanks a lot. Love coming on.
Awesome. All right. Well, we're going to do some drag racing on the other side with Joe Shearwood coming to you live from the Strip in Vegas. You've been listening to the New Mexico Motorsports Report here on ESPN Radio. 101.7 The Team.
I'm a grinner, I'm a lover, and I'm a sinner. Play my music in the sun.
Hey, this is Matt Willis with ESPN.com, and you are listening to the New Mexico Motorsports Report with David Swope here on ESPN Radio, 101.7 The Team.
The pit stop is now over. Let's return to the New Mexico Motorsports Report and get things revved up with your phone calls at 994-1017. That's 994-1017. Now, back to the New Mexico Motorsports Report, presented by Napa Auto Parts, Yearwood Performance, ABQ Dragway, the Unser Racing Museum, and the New Mexico Rods and Rides Magazine. Here is David.
All right, welcome back to the New Mexico Motorsports Report here on ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team. Matt Hagen topped Bunny Car qualifying yesterday at the NHRA Toyota Nationals, breaking the track record time of 3.872 at 329.18 miles per hour in a Dodge Charger. Leah Pritchett led Top Fuel, Drew Skillman in Pro Stock, and Jerry Savoy in Pro Stock Motorcycle in the fifth event in the sixth race NHRA Mellow Yellow Countdown to the Championship. Pritchett had a 3.705 pass at 326.63 to break the track record time. Skillman ran a 6.681 at 204.94, and his Chevy Camaro and Savoy had a 6.904 at 192.66 and a Suzuki. Now joining us live from Las Vegas, Nevada, is Joe Shearwood. How you doing this morning, Joe?
How's it going, man?
I'm doing great. Hey, nice little trip out there to Vegas. How you liking it?
Oh, well, today's looking a lot better. Yesterday was very overcast, and we had probably about an hour and a half rain delay. So
wow.
That really put a damper on things. But it's totally clear and sunny. It looks like it may be a lot hotter, so I don't think the guys will be making the outstanding numbers today like they did yesterday.
Yeah, those cooler temperatures really do seem to bring out some record-breaking passes. But tell me a little bit about, I mean, just the energy there, the international flair. I mean, SEMA is next week there in Vegas. There's probably a lot of extra people from around the world to come in for that and make an extra couple of days by going out to the drag strip. Tell me what the feel is, kind of the
well,
vibe.
It's amazing everywhere you walk. I mean, yesterday when we were, my buddy was in tickets for Will Call line. I was just kind of waiting around for him, and all the people around us were speaking German and Dutch, and it was so weird because, I mean, you'll be in the souvenir tent and you hear every language, you know, amazing. I mean, there's even people here from like Asia, somewhere like, I don't know, China or whatever, but you hear a lot of Asian accents and stuff. It's very international race.
That is fantastic, because that is one of the big differences I noticed between Formula One and NASCAR was just the international languages that are being spoken. I mean, there was a lot more wine and mixed drinks that were going around than just beer. But let's talk a little bit about, I mean, you know, watching the eliminations and setting up for the qualifying and stuff that's going on today. I mean, you do a lot of coverage out at Albuquerque Dragway and see a lot of great stuff. But what's the level of equipment there in Vegas?
It's hard to describe. I mean, like, let's just put it this way. Like, we have a Albuquerque racer named Clint Satterfield who's running in pro stock.
Right.
And he ran in a 609, which, you know, a couple of years ago used to be a pretty decent number. He's 23rd on the sheet today.
Wow.
Yeah, he needs to run the 596, which would, I think his best is a 95, but I don't know when he ran. I think he ran that last year. But yeah, and they've got one more qualifying session to go, and they've got 26 cars. So it's brutal. I mean, it is brutal. The alcohol funny car class, which is still considered a sportsman class, but they're running 550s and 560s.
Right.
And yeah, and they've got 28 of them, and it's just really brutal, because like you see, this is the end of the year, so you have this race, and then you have a divisional race at the track next week.
Right.
And then you've got the national Pomona, so it's basically a triple header. So a lot of racers make this trip. There's races from like Chicago and New York. And yes, there's even an alcohol funny car racer from I think Finland here this weekend.
Yeah, well, maybe make a comparison. I know you went out to Indy this year too, the U.S. Nationals. Make a comparison there between, you know, I mean, maybe what's going on in Vegas and what you experienced out at Indy.
Well, Indy is the biggest race.
Exactly.
I mean, you get one and a half points as compared to most races. So that was an incentive to get races there. And it's a long race. It's 4 days. I mean, you have five pro qualifying sessions here, and just about any other race, you just have four. And so it's totally a different deal. I think this deal here for Vegas, I think is really the atmosphere of being in Vegas.
Okay.
I mean, it's such a draw. No, I mean, it really is such
yeah.
a draw. I mean, in Indy, I mean, it's like any other town. There's not a whole lot of nightlife in Indy. I mean, you have, you know, your movie theaters
yeah.
and your restaurants, but here you've got you name it, you'll find it here. So,
yeah. Well, that's a great comparison. One of the things I was kind of looking at is, you know, Ron Capps, and we're talking about, NHRA Funny Car, has had some trouble qualifying specifically in Vegas, and I was just kind of, you know, wondering if that was maybe the level of competition being different. Or what, of course, because he's got a nice 64-point lead, and he's got two races to go, finished second four times, and so now he's got a good chance to actually close this thing out. But I was just kind of curious if maybe it's just the level of competition, or, hey, it's the second to last race of the year, tensions are high.
Well, in Capps's situation, I think it's more been a case of bad luck. I mean, because, like you say, 64 points, that's only three rounds.
Yeah.
And with two races to go, that could be chewed up real fast.
Yep.
So he's really got to be on his game. But he's number three right now, so they've got a good baseline for today.
Awesome.
Excuse me, for today. He's right behind Matt Hagen and John Force. And like I say, that's three rounds, so he better go at least two rounds tomorrow, you know, to really solidify his chances of winning, of holding it in Pomona. Antoine Brown, he's got 150 points. That's almost eight rounds. He'd have to stumble very badly to lose at this point.
Yeah.
You know,
if you leave Vegas with 131 points, lead, you've got it done. And right now, you've got Antoine Brown with 150 point lead over Doug Collada. So
yeah,
all he's going to do is hold serve.
Yeah, I think he would have to not qualify, which he couldn't because he's already qualified now.
Absolutely.
And then go out first round today and not qualify. Yeah, it'd be very, very tough for him to lose at this point.
Yeah. Hey, I did want to ask you something real quick. I mean, we had just had Johnny Johnson's on talking about the Albuquerque Speedway Park and Raceway Reunion.
Yeah.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about maybe a quick memory or two of you with Speedway Park and with the Raceway.
I started going to Speedway Park in 1967. My father used to print all the programs for them.
Awesome.
And the guy, the announcer, and you talk about a wild announcer, his name was Doc Lemon. I mean, this guy would, I mean, oh my God, we got a pile! I mean, he would get so animated behind the mic. Yeah, oh, it was like he was lost in his own world. Well, anyway, and so that's how I started. I was 7 years old at the time, and of course, Speedway Park was pretty close, like 2 miles from our house. Well, Raceway opened up, 1968, I believe. But it was pretty far. It was like 15 miles from my house, and my parents weren't about to take me that far. So I never got to Albuquerque Raceway till 1974.
Yeah.
That was the first time. So I missed a lot of good racing, you know, Dick Poole and George Brazil, all those rivalries they had in those early days.
Absolutely.
But yeah, but I'm really looking forward to that reunion. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Hey, Joe, appreciate you joining us from Vegas. We'll see you when you get back to town.
All right, man. You take care.
All right. That was Joe Sherwood. He covers a lot of stuff and really kind of keeps us all informed on neat things that are going on Facebook. So, definitely check out Joe Sherwood on Facebook. A lot of great photographs he's been doing in regards to the Albuquerque Dragway. Hey, quick programming note, FM Sports Saturday coming up on deck, 9 a.m. Team High School Show with Gary Heron at 10. 11 a.m., the Henry T. Show. 1:30, we're going to have Baylor versus Texas. 6 p.m., we're going to have Indians versus Cubs Sunday, 8 to 10, Caliber Sportsman Show, 11 a.m., Raiders Broncos, 5:30. We're going to start with the Dallas Cowboys pregame show, and at 6:30, Eagles versus Cowboys. You've been listening to the Mexico Motorsports Report here on ESPN Radio, 101.7, The Team.
Sing with them, sing.
This is Al Unser, four-time winner of the Indy 500. You've been listening to David Swope of the New Mexico Motorsport Report on ESPN Radio 101.7, The Team.
Hi, this is Vin Scully. You're listening to Albuquerque's Home for the Dodgers, ESPN Radio 101.7, The Team.
KQTM-FM, Rio Rancho, Albuquerque.